Okay, we'll start. It's right at 7. So welcome to our village board meeting on July 12th at 7 o'clock. I'd ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Bachner.
Here.
Trustee Gillis.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee Johnson.
Here.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
President Meduzzi.
Here. I am here. Okay, if I can all ask you to stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Bob, if you could do me a favor, see what's up there. Okie dokie, yeah. All right. Well, that could stay up there. But that's okay. All right, okay. Then we'll get to the citizens' comments. And I know we have a few here. I think all on the same subject right here. So, okay, so I will let you, so we'll start with Mark Tomasini.
I want to defer until the, to Sheila Harris.
To Sheila. Yeah. Okay. Well, the good news is you're up next, Sheila. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is there someone I can give a flash drive?
Yes, of course, John, right there. John Pape.
I'll pull it up at the
screen. Oh, you just want to show you
this? Yeah, I know. We're going to do this.
Okay, perfect.
I'm going to tell them. She's upstairs. Oh. Is she on there?
She's not on there. She's upstairs.
So we do have to.
Do the photos. The photos. And then do the sewer lines, please.
Good evening. My name is Sheila Harris. My husband and I live on the 1400 block of Monroe Avenue, where we have lived for nearly 14 years, and we're very frustrated right about now. A little over a week ago, my husband called the village to investigate a hole in the asphalt of our street. Within a day or so, the village public works staff were at our door with pictures and a flash drive of a video taken from the main sewer, which showed that the sewer service lines of both our house and the Goldstein's house across the street were severed from the main sewer line in the middle of the street in front of our homes. They informed us in the Goldsteins that as homeowners, we are responsible for the in-street sewer repair required for each of our lines. We were shocked. In the pages provided by the public works professionals, there was also a copy of the village ordinance that indicates resident responsibility for this type of repair and a list of contractors licensed to do this type of work in the village. We were told that the repair should be done soon to prevent further damage, putting us on the clock for getting estimates and starting the work. We agreed to request estimates for just one project to repair both lines and to split the cost evenly between the two families. Our first estimate came in at $9,500 with very little detail. The second estimate was by phone, sight unseen, indicating at least $15,000 based on the description of the issue. The third estimate is for $12,500 with an additional cost of $4,500 to each family to repair the line to the parkway. As you might imagine, being presented with estimates such as these merely added insult to injury. With each estimate came greater frustration while we were lamenting this entire issue. Our senior neighbor, and immediately north of me, was informed by her plumbers that her sewer line required rotting. I shuddered at the thought of her or any senior neighbor, likely on a fixed income, potentially having to address anything remotely similar to our current problem. So as we began to think about the sewer repair in greater detail, we discussed a series of what ifs. What if the severed sewer line problem is due to flooding on our street or the sandy soil in North River Forest, past street repair and repaving, past work on other utilities or other events beyond our control? What if our issue is the result of pre-existing issues with the main sewer line? What if it is determined there is greater damage once the street is open for the repair? How much could this really cost? What if there's further damage in the future in the same area after the warranty for the work has expired? Would we yet again be responsible for the cost of repair? What if a neighbor on either side of each family determines they have an issue with their attachment to the main line? Can they claim it was due to the work done to repair our lines? Where does our homeowner liability end? We checked with our neighboring villages of Oak Park, Forest Park, and Elmwood Park. Each of these 100-plus-year-old communities has several miles of aged sewer infrastructure, and each takes responsibility for any sewer work and repair beyond the curb. Why then is River Forest so different? Buying in an older community comes with the expectation of needed work on the property, but most of this work can be predicted and planned for after having a home inspection and as well as with regular home maintenance. But no one expects to be responsible for what is 18 feet beyond the curb and 9 feet below the asphalt in the middle of the street. The village is responsible for the repair of the hardscapes, asphalt, curbs, gutters, sidewalks, and in addition takes responsibility for the parkway trees, even though we are responsible for mowing the parkway. But if the village is responsible for these hardscapes, why not the hardscape underneath the asphalt for which they are responsible? This infrastructure under the asphalt beyond the curb, given its location, age, and deterioration. This infrastructure under the asphalt beyond the curb, given its location, age, and deterioration, should not be the responsibility of the homeowner. These concerns represent why we are standing before you today requesting that the village do two things. Number one, take immediate action to repair the damage to our sewers and street and bear the burden of repair and cost as our neighboring communities do. And number two, eliminate this burdensome ordinance due to the hardship these types of repairs can create on homeowners and the potential for unintended risk and consequences placed on homeowners if they are to bear the burden of repair. We have outlined many open questions and concerns around this issue with more potentially not yet identified. If the village continues to contend that we, as the homeowners, are responsible for this repair, we are concerned that this could result in a protracted delay in repair, as we will be obligated to fully explore the issue, our options, risk, and liabilities before we should feel comfortable even moving forward. Further, the question of what caused the initial damage seems to be an important item that the current ordinance seems to dismiss as irrelevant by placing the burden of street infrastructure repairs on homeowners. This is a notion that we also will want to better understand and possibly challenge before proceeding. Given our aging infrastructure, this type of sewer line compromise and failure to sections in the street can occur at any time on any of our blocks in front of any of our homes. My guess is that most of our residents will fall short of mitigating the risk of such a failure because most are not aware of this ordinance and do not consider the street or what's below it to be included within their property lines. As homeowners, we unfairly begin behind the eight ball without recourse given the current ordinance. We ask that the village take responsibility for and cover the cost of the repairs to our sewer line sections beyond the curb and eliminate this ordinance for future issues. Thank you for listening to our concerns and for your immediate consideration of our request.
Thank you. Thank you, Sheila. I know there's several more, so Agnes?
Yep.
Hi, my name is Agnes Goldstein, and I live across the street from the Harris family and have been in River Forest for 9 years. My husband and I also are frustrated and agree wholeheartedly with Sheila's comments and would like to appeal to the village board that a homeowner should not be responsible for the repair of a sewer service line underneath the street. Adding to what Sheila just mentioned, we have come to realize that as homeowners, just how ill-equipped we are to manage in-street repair. Because we do not have experience with these issues and because village policy is to not recommend any one contractor for the work, we are forced to scan the village's list of licensed and approved contractors and request estimates with detailed information to help us understand what this all entails. What we have encountered are many contractors who do not do this type of work, specifically because it involves street repair, as well as potentially encountering problems with the sewer main. We have had a contractor tell us that while he does extensive work in River Forest, including at my own home, he will not take on this project. We have had contractors tell us that they are too busy or that we will have to wait 3 weeks to get an estimate due to the recent heavy rains. We have received received estimates between $10,000 to over $20,000 now that are simply over the phone or written with little detail. We have been told that our pipes are in 3-foot sections, yet we need to replace 5 feet. We have been told that since both of our lines are disconnected at this junction, that it is more likely to be a problem with the integrity of the sewer main than with our lines. What we have heard most consistently, however, is disbelief that we are responsible for this type of project. The village ordinance states that property owners shall repair or cause to be repaired defective pipes within 72 hours of notification. We have been informed that getting this work done quickly is necessary to prevent greater damage to the street, as well as to prevent damage to our homes. As homeowners, we are now put into a time-pressured position of having to select a contractor whom we have found to provide little detail on their work and somehow trust them without many assurances that the work will be completed accurately, effectively, and without damage to other structures. The liability of having homeowners coordinate this type of work is just too great. I'd also like to point out that when other projects are completed on our street, like repaving, work on gas lines, work on the sewer main, and others which involve things like digging and heavy trucks and machinery, we as homeowners do not get to have someone inspect our service lines to make sure that they haven't been damaged by this type of work. We are left to trust that all is okay, but if it's not, it's our responsibility. Our street, as you can see in the picture, frequently floods with heavy rains, including in these past weeks. River Forest completed phase one of the Northside Stormwater Management project a few years ago, which, from my understanding, was designed to establish separate storm and sanitary sewer systems and included the replacement of private water and sewer lines. Our block was originally included in phase two of this project, which was then deemed unnecessary. If others have had their service lines replaced due to updating our old infrastructure, how is this any different? Finally, two doors down from my house, there is a catch basin on the curb to collect stormwater. Around 7 or so years ago, it inexplicably started to sink, causing a large reoccurring hole in front of my neighbor's homes. Rightfully, the village addressed and fixed the issue. But why was it sinking, and what else is sinking? As homeowners, there's no way we can have an adequate understanding of the issues beneath our village streets that would enable us to manage the scope of problems that occur there. By placing this burden on homeowners, the village is willfully allowing there to be more time between issue discovery and correction, which in turn increases the risk of greater damage and thus greater expense to the homeowner. Public Works officials, on the other hand, have experience with the infrastructure. They have knowledge of the materials and process of the repair. They have a greater understanding of the codes and the legalities involved, and have experience and established relationships with the appropriate contractors. The corrective and financial responsibility for repairs beyond the curb should lie with the village. In closing, we have three additional questions we'd like to ask. The first one is, did the village receive federal COVID relief funding for infrastructure? If so, can these funds be used for this needed sewer repair in the street in front of our homes? The second is, since phase two of the Northside Stormwater Management Project did not take place, has the village investigated whether there are other similar issues on our street, or is this an issue that is only addressed once significant problems arise? And lastly, how soon can the board provide us with answers regarding the sewer repair urgently needed in front of our homes? While we are still waiting for estimates and taking the time to learn about this process as much as we can, the rains will continue to come, the street will continue to flood, the sandy ground 9 feet deep will continue to wash away and shift the underlying structures, and the sinkhole will get bigger. None of us want to create further damage. The village needs to be responsible for the necessary repairs. Thank you so much for listening to our concerns and for your immediate consideration of our request.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Todd?
Good evening. Todd Moore, 1402 Monroe Avenue. My basement has flooded 3 times in the last 14 months. And last May, when it flooded, I sent information to the village engineer, Jeff Loster, who assured me he would send it up the chain to his director about FEMA programs that will do a 75 to 25 or 100% cost share for flood mitigation. So my question is, have you received this information and have you applied for these funds?
Okay. I don't know. We'll get to that question. I'll
That was over a year ago.
Okay.
So for phase two to now be deemed unreasonable when you can go out and get federal funding for this seems a little lackluster on the part of the village.
Yeah.
So.
But no, thanks, Todd. I mean, we'll answer the question. So let's get through the speakers if you don't mind. And I've written down a lot.
I'm happy to send you the information again, yeah, because in my professional relationship with FEMA, I have access to the people who administer these programs.
Oh, okay. Thank you. We'll take you up on it. But we'll definitely answer these questions. I just want to get through everybody's questions and then so we don't repeat or not address everyone. Anna?
So I'm Anna Poulin. I live at 1406 Monroe on the block. And I really can't go into, I mean, I think Sheila, they really have addressed the issue thoroughly. But my concern also is, you know, we have a lot of elderly people. My mom is 89, lives across the street. We have another 90-year-old. And while I handle most of my mom's finances to make sure she can stay in her home forever, because she's been a lifelong, you know, after she went to, you know, she's from Italy and she came here and she settled here. She's been here 60 years. But this is a cost that there's just no way that can be taken on by our seniors in our community. And I know that we really have embraced trying to keep the seniors in our community here with the programs that we've instilled and the support that we're giving them. And I can't even imagine any of them navigating anything like this as far as estimates and phone calls and hearing, you know, I mean, there's just no way. So I'm kind of on their behalf here to speak, because it's just not, there's just no way a senior will be able to live in this community when that, they can take everything into consideration and make sure that they can afford to stay where they are. But this unforeseen thing could make somebody leave.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Thanks, Anna. Yeah, you're right. Okay. Mark, I'm going to jump to Mark and then we'll get to Jan after. Either Mark Tomasini, Mark Shelstead, whichever one.
Mark Tomasini, 1431 Monroe. The sinkhole was basically in front of my house and Mark Shelstead's house, which you'll hear in a minute, about 6-7 years ago. And the sinkhole was, it grew over time as water continued on. And it was the catch basin was the problem. So it was a catch basin on the east side of the street at the end of my driveway in between both of our properties. What ultimately happened was it seemed like there was a hole in the catch basin. So talking about washing out, that catch basin's catching all the water in the street that ultimately is probably washing out all the sand and or aggregate that's holding these clay pipes in place, that this can go up and down the line depending upon where, you know, gravity essentially, that ultimately probably caused this erosion that ultimately led to the breakage of the connection of the personal sewer lines into the main. So if that's the case, if the village does not know where these holes and these catch basins are, it could be happening up and down that street or even to the north, or probably not to the south because of the mitigation that was done with that recent construction. But from the north, I would think that there's multiple houses with the same problem. So, and then ultimately how they fixed it was a significant amount of aggregate was dumped into the hole. I don't know how much was actually fixed or not fixed, but one thing that can happen, so some investigation can be done with that hole and see how bad the actual destruction may have been from this sinkhole and or find the cause of where this water is causing this erosion.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Good points. Okay, Mark Shelstead?
Hi, Mark Shelstead, 1435 Monroe. I just want to back up as a witness to this sinkhole thing. It was at least half in front of my house, and I was at home, and I was quite curious as to what was going on. And to say that it was a catch basin alone issue, I think understates a little bit, because it was quite a big excavation to fix it, all the way down to 9 or 10 feet, and clearly the sewer main was exposed. So there was some work connecting to the sewer main, and as a precedent, I kind of think it goes along the lines of what we're thinking with the concerns today. The other concern I have, just as a practical matter, I believe the ordinance indicates a 72-hour response or mitigation. I mean, clearly that is beyond silly. You won't even get a call back, even in slow times, from a contractor in that time. It'll be weeks before you get a bid, especially when you're talking about something that, you know, they are bearing a lot of risk too. That's why a lot of them will not engage to do this kind of work. But then on top of it, you know, to get the work done, those contractors that say that they're ready to do it next week or tomorrow are probably the ones you don't want to hire.
Yeah.
For a logical reason. So we're really talking about, it could easily be a month or two before something gets done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Mark. Okay. Before you get to Jan, let's try to address, because I know you're here. I don't know if we can give you all answers to your issues, but first of all, I want to say thank you for being here. I know Sheila, you had called me on this, and I'll be honest with you, the whole thing did surprise me too. When you peel back the onion about, you know, the 72 hours and where the sinkhole originates and who's responsible. And then when you start really peeling it, it's like, what? This is a mess. So one of the things that I, for sure, that's going to come out of this, I think, is just, you know, revisiting that ordinance in a way that can be practical as well. So I think they asked some questions. I'd like to ask Jeff or John or Lisa, just so they get some idea of, you know, where we can take this, because we don't want our residents to leave here thinking we are not going to look at this in some fashion and try to address it in some fashion. So I know the question was, you know, does COVID cost, you know, cover infrastructure? I don't believe so. I think it's lost revenue. That's what the COVID reimbursement is for us. I don't know. I'll go ahead and that one I know for sure. So
yeah.
Why don't you go ahead and, I mean, I know, you know, I think we should certainly address Todd's. I mean, there are some good questions here. So.
Sure. So, John, if I can have you come up, because I know that when the issue was brought to the village's attention, they're right, the village did go out and televise the lines and saw that these are clay sewer pipes that had collapsed in the area leading to the village's main, which is not uncommon with clay sewer pipes. The 72-hour notification period, so the section of the code that we're talking about is section 5.12.10, and it does require that repairs be commenced within 72 hours. Now, we're not enforcing it. Nobody is getting cited. We're not taking any kind of remedial action against residents. We understand they're making a good faith effort to address the issue, to understand what their responsibilities are. We understand that they're here tonight raising their concerns, and so there's no punitive measure that's taken against the resident or any resident who's making a good faith effort to make this repair. This is the village's ordinance. The ordinance does require that the residents make these repairs. This ordinance was modified in 2011, so it is about 10 years old at this point. But John, if you could help speak to this issue in particular, and NSMP phase two, and kind of where we were at. I think that was the other question, was what steps the village is taking to resolve the flooding in this area.
Yeah. Right. So as far as NSMP phase two goes, that is already designed. Phase one doesn't connect to this area, as the residents know. But as far as flooding goes, it looks like this situation, this could happen on a number of village streets that get inundated with a tremendous amount of rainfall. The repair issue, we can certainly get the residents any information as far as contractors go. We have emergency contractors that we can use, so we can get that information to them. The flooding issue, I don't think it would be a part of their sewer just disconnecting at the main. That would be a separate issue that they would have to deal with, and it comes back to ownership. So this just happens to be the code where you own your own sewer main, your own sewer lateral. The village owns our own sewer main, and so whoever owns it has to repair it.
That's the current code.
Can I
ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was interested when one of the residents said that some of the surrounding municipalities don't have this same type of structure where...
Yeah, I would have to look into that. I'm not sure, you know, what the other municipalities do.
Yeah,
you know.
I'd like to know what our surrounding municipalities do, and also why we made this change back in 2011.
Sure. Yeah.
What caused that?
Okay.
You mean the change for the...
They didn't make a change.
Yeah, well, someone just said that this, this statute was modified in 2011.
Lisa just did.
Ordinance.
Yeah.
But...
But was the whole statute, or were there parts of it?
It looks like this was a portion of it.
So more of the ordinance was modified in 2011?
So there are other references in the code to this being from a 1981 code. And then this ordinance in particular, there have been modifications over the years. But this particular section, I believe, I'd have to go back and look and look up the original ordinance. But it looks as though it was either added or modified in 2011. So I'd have to go back and do a little bit of research.
Ownership and liability are my two questions. Mm-hmm. So who owns them and who's liable for them, either during this modification or a previous modification?
Previous to 2011, I don't know. I'd have to research that. Since 2011, the residents own this, even if it goes into the street, and are required to make the repairs.
Can I ask a question about this as well? So how often does this happen, John, and where we've got issues with the streets then too that may be beyond potentially the homeowner's understanding?
Fortunately, it's pretty rare. It's just a handful per year.
What does that
mean? If that, you know, so it's not, it doesn't happen very often. But it does happen.
So maybe about five.
I could research exact numbers, but it doesn't happen that often.
Do you have any flavor as to why we would make that the resident's responsibility, given that, you know, any kind of trucks or cars, you know, it's beyond their control. The street is beyond their control, technically.
Right. So it's just a question of ownership. So that sewer line is only there to serve their home or their business or their property. So they would be responsible for owning it, maintaining it, making sure it's in good working condition. If they had root infiltration, they would use a rotting company to rot it out, and they'd be responsible for that. So if there's damage to it and it happens to be under the street, then they'd be responsible for that as well. But that's the reasoning behind
it. Right, no, I understand. But if it blocked the street, let's say it took a long time, they're allowed to block the street as long as... because it's their property, or, I mean.
Well, I think that's probably why that 72 hours was in that ordinance, you know, to get it done quickly. But I don't know the history of why that was created.
I was gonna suggest that while Lisa looks at the ordinance, can you also look at the history of why it was changed in 2011 and made the residents the owner of that section of the sewer?
Yeah, that might take me a little bit more time to research than what I have sitting here right this moment.
Okay.
We can certainly come back to the village board with more information. I'm just checking the ordinance.
John, you got something?
Yeah, could we also check municipal law just in terms of ownership beyond your property lines, whether or not that is standard or different?
Sure. I think it's a good question.
And I have one other one, since you're doing research. Since you're doing research, what, since 2011 into today, how many residents have had this happen to them, and what's been the cost associated to the residents?
So the cost that the residents are estimating, the Public Works Director and Jeff and I talked today, and $10,000 to $15,000 is not an unusual number to hear. Anytime clay pipe collapses on your property, there's often a lot of excavation and restoration work. So those numbers don't seem completely foreign.
Okay, so then the number of residents that have had this work done since 2011 have paid that.
Sure. And so looking in the ordinance, in 2011, this was a section that was added.
The timing?
What's that?
The timing of it? Or the
this whole the responsibility and the timing was approved in 2011. It was added.
And just to clarify one thing that you said,
if you guys want to talk, just let me know. You can get to the mic so we can have a good conversation. Go ahead, Katie.
Just to clarify, this breakage and so this repair is not happening on the resident's property. It's happening in the street.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I just want to clarify that because I think you referenced, you know, clay pipe breakage on a resident's property, but this is not on the resident's property. This is in the
It's in the street. The line exists to serve the private property and is owned under the ordinance by the property owner.
There's definitely I have to agree with not because you're the residents. It's just that it does seem, you know, Anna, you pointed out a very interesting point, and that is, I mean, a senior could never possibly afford this, or know even know how to solve it, than afford it. To your point, it just seems like, you know, there's so many questions about other municipalities and what they do, mm-hmm. and why they do it. And I know, you know, it's easy for us to say it's the president's, you know, responsibility, but there's just so much cost and responsibility. So I think before we can say something different, I think we have to do some research so we know what we're agreeing to as a board, right, to go forward if we change anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cost, the timing, to the residents, because, you know, it's taxpayer money, taxes that we're spending. So I just want to make sure that, you know, we don't get into a situation where we're overspending, right? So I think you guys would appreciate that too.
Yeah, John. One comment. In the meantime, while we research, is there any mechanism to help these homeowners?
Yeah, and that's what we were going to talk about, the timing that was asked by Agnes. And then we'll get to Todd's question, because I'm kind of curious about FEMA. As we're doing this, you know, what would be the timing of all of this so that we could make sure that, well, so long as this flooding's not really affecting your property, but it's, you know, the sinkhole's there.
The sinkhole is there, and the sewer is disconnected. There is an issue with sewer being disconnected. The repair needs to commence as quickly as possible.
Gotcha.
Particularly if the homes are occupied and the sewer lines are being used. The sinkhole will continue to grow in size, or could potentially continue to grow in size, if this issue is left unaddressed, in addition to the fact that we could have whatever is coming out of those sewer lines eroding the area in that space. The repair needs to commence. Now, if the board wants to create a structure for assistance, that's something you can take up, and we can research that. But for right now, I think time is still of the essence to get the repair completed.
To me, it seems, okay, 1 minute. I mean, to me, it seems like, you know, because we're, time is of the essence, and, you know, there's still a lot of confusion about what this ordinance and why it was changed and who's responsible, why they're responsible. I just think maybe we should consider as a board to, as a village, is to get this thing done. The village, pick it up.
Well, okay.
I just had his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ken.
I just wanted to know, Lisa, while you're looking into things, is there, I'm sure there are other things that we do mitigate that are similar, like, mm-hmm. if we do any kind of plumbing work on the street area or before the street area, that we as a village already currently mitigate, so as to not necessarily have to change the statute but add something onto something that we currently mitigate. So I would like to be interested to know, are there any things we reimburse for already that are similar or somewhat similar to that?
What we do,
not within the street.
Yeah, like in the home. For instance, if, right, we do...
there's backflow prevention, and there's the lead sewer line, lead sewer service line replacement. But when it is the residence infrastructure, when it is the privately owned infrastructure, no.
Yeah.
So we do split the cost for the residents when they decide to put in a flood mitigation program, mm-hmm. system.
A backflow.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, there's a reimbursement.
That's like a $12,000... cost, something like that. Is that right?
The reimbursement amount is up to $4,000.
Oh, yes. It's like $8,000, and we do. Oh,
we cap it.
We capped it.
And we cap it at the lead service line replacement program as well.
Right.
So, if anybody, why don't you, John, let the residents come in.
Sure.
I just want to. I mean, this is. We have a fairly light agenda, so I think it's worth spending time on this.
First of all, thank you all again for your consideration of our request and for listening to our concerns. But I have to say, sitting here, I am getting sick to my stomach. This is under the street. It is a sewer line, and it's amazing that our two at the T have detached. And my husband and I lived in Oak Park for 13 years before we moved to River Forest 14 years ago. We've been in this community now almost 30 years. I personally called the public works departments of Elmwood Park and spoke to their staff. I personally called Oak Park staff, and I personally called Elmwood Park, Forest Park, Oak Park, all three. They all cover this infrastructure to the homes that lies beyond the curb in the street. They are each similar in that they are 100 plus year old communities with aging infrastructure. There's to expect a homeowner to come out of pocket. I don't know if any of you have discretionary income that you'd like to come out of pocket for and pay the, for the repair of asphalt, but we don't. And I don't want to pay a dime for anything beyond the curb. I do not. And I don't think it's fair to ask, let alone for a 54-year-old, but for someone that's in their 90s. I think it is ridiculous. And I think that we need to really be honest with how this sounds coming from the board. And each of you are residents. Each of you are residents in this community. Some of you may be on blocks that have had the mitigation, which it would be great if we had had that option. But our street was flooding before this sinkhole. Our street has continued to flood since the mitigation on the 12 and 1300 blocks. We have been flooding continuously. Nothing changed. So to deem phase two unnecessary was already ridiculous, if you think about it, because here are photos showing the flooding on our street that we have waded through since and prior to the mitigation on the blocks south of us. Again, I'm respectfully asking you to really think about this as homeowners yourself who may be faced with this issue. I do not want to spend a dime beyond the curb. I am not used to hearing that this would be the responsibility of a homeowner beyond the curb. Again, I lived in Oak Park for 13 years in an 80-year-old house. I expected to pay for repairs on the home. A homeowner inspection told me what I needed to work on. Nobody expects to ask their inspector, hey, can you run a line into the street? Nobody does that. Nobody that I've spoken to in any community that I have friends in has said to me that when they purchased their homes, they asked the inspector to run a camera into the sewer line beyond the curb. So
thanks. All right, yeah, Sheila, I think
so
we
So all get. I'm saying is I ask that you please consider this not only as village trustees, but as homeowners and residents in this community.
Yep.
This ordinance needs to be modified, eliminated, or otherwise, because I think this is truly an ask that is just ridiculous of any homeowner in this community. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Sheila. I want to get to Todd's question on FEMA. So John or Jeff, I think Todd's got a great question. You know, where can we get the money? I know FEMA does have money for some of this. I mean, we've always searched and no?
Well, I'll have to look into it. I just don't know of a FEMA program that would pay for a private sewer line to a property owner that has collapsed.
Todd's got some stuff.
Todd has. I was going to say. May I suggest then that maybe Todd can work with the village staff and
or
and
Jeff.
Move it.
I mean, John should be aware of some of these FEMA programs. So,
right, and the ones I'm familiar with have to do with being in floodplain, that type of thing. So, I can certainly look into, you know, any program that can help people out. I have no problem with that.
And can I ask Todd a question? Mm-hmm. Todd, since you're familiar with this program, do you know how fast or what's the timing of getting funds from the federal government? Or FEMA?
I don't know the timing.
Okay.
This is the exact brochure I emailed to Jeff, who said he was sending it up the chain. It's the exact same brochure there.
Okay.
I do know that all of it will go through the state of Illinois first, and I have the contact of the person at the state of Illinois that you need to talk to that I also sent to Jeff a year ago. I'm happy to work with you and to help navigate that bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I imagine too that if it was applicable, that we would be able to get the, you know, we wouldn't have to wait for the funds. We could pay out and then get reimbursed.
Or not.
If it was applicable.
Right.
Yeah. The money is typically allocated, and as soon as you get it, typically it's a relatively fast.
Yeah. Well, I know we had a great FEMA program back in the 2000. Remember, we had the great flood of 2010, and they helped us with the berms along the Plains River over at River Oaks, that whole area. So,
I mean, and they came real quick. So I agree. I think federal government works quicker than state of Illinois. But so saying that, I mean, if there's possible funding, possible, mm-hmm. And we could do the research, but that takes time and energy, which is not fine. We could do the time and energy, but we still have the sinkhole and we still right. have the ability to. I just propose we go ahead and fix this. I know it's a lot, but I think we need to do it and then do our research and either change our ordinance or modify our ordinance or keep our ordinance. And but I mean, right now we got an issue we have to solve.
So I go back to the liability issue. How much liability do we have for homeowners that have done this over the last 10 or 11 years? And are we willing to take that on? So I mean, that's part of the decision making process.
Kathy, if I may.
Yeah, Tom.
So I think what we need to remember here is obviously the village knows there's a flooding problem because there was phase one of this flood mitigation, right? So with that baseline, north of Greenfield was not taken care of, phase two.
Let's address that. I think we need to address the phase two because I don't know if we completely said it was unnecessary. What we, and I think, Jeff, what we did is we said because of how the sewers were separated and that Elmwood Park separated from the North Avenue sewer, that we felt that, and I thought we did, you know, kind of investigated it with Chris Burke, that we did not need phase two at this point in time. Now, maybe I'm making that up, but that's what I thought.
Well, keep in mind, if we did phase two, these sewers that are under the street right now would still be in existence and would still serve the same purpose as far as they would just turn into sanitary only sewers. So everything coming out of your house would go into these same sewers and they'd still be the same age and everything. We just put in separate storm sewers, which would obviously improve the flooding situation, but we could still be in the same situation because the same sewers are under the street dealing with the sanitary sewer. So I just want to make that clear. We wouldn't get rid of the sewers that are in existence right now.
But we don't really know what's causing it.
What?
But we don't really know what's causing it.
What's causing the separation from
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
And that's my point, Kathy, is that with this known issue and with a year ago, my toilet in the basement, 45 minutes, it flowed backwards into my basement.
Yikes.
That pressure coming out of the storm sewers through these clay pipes, more than likely the issue for breaking these 50, 60, 80-year-old clay pipes. So for the resident to have to pay for that, when it's, in my eyes, clearly a village issue with the drainage of the stormwater, I think is pretty simple.
Well, okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, fair enough. Although I'm interested in the cause and effect of the water racing
well,
through.
Well, one of them, somebody said here that one of the people that you bid with mentioned that it was the main line, potentially, of the village's main line, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I guess, is that something that we can also immediately check to make sure?
Check the main line?
Yeah, I mean,
if
someone is saying that it's...
That's something we
potential.
Do as part of this process. We check the main line first
yeah.
to make sure it's not a problem.
You did this when the complaint came.
Right, right. We went out there
and
checked it.
So you've said that this isn't...
The main line is not broken. It's broken past. So the connection is here and it's broken past the connection.
So the question then is, and that's what Todd's bringing up, I think maybe Katie was mentioning, mm-hmm. Is the cause of any of the rush of the water or you causing it to, you know, detach the clay?
I mean, it's part of the wear and tear of, you know, decades of being underground. So possibly.
Awesome.
Cool.
I just want to make sure that we try to fix this problem. So, I mean, I'm happy to keep having you talk.
I want to address something that he shared.
Oh, yeah, sure, Sheila.
That even with phase two, that you said the existing sewer lines would remain in place.
Mm-hmm.
We read on the village website that 275 private lines were repaired or replaced with phase one. They're private sewer lines to the main.
But the residents paid for it.
Yeah.
But they only paid $5,000. I'll pay $5,000 before I pay $20,000 for a hole in the street.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, to be honest.
That was a program.
So they
right.
had an option, at least, and they
was a program, right?
That was a program.
Yeah, that was a program.
It was offered to the residents, and it was lower because of...
Well, that might be a solution.
Economic. I was going to think that maybe we would do something along those lines based on that. Also, I was going to suggest that sort of where you're going with, Kathy, is that based on, I guess, mitigation of damages, maybe we just go ahead, fix the repair, and then do the research we want, whatever it is, and we can come back to the residents if we have to. But I'm thinking there's some cost that the residents will pay, maybe not the full $10,000 or $15,000. And you're right, we would pay maybe $5,000 or whatever we paid the last time, at least from the first phase one is an option or what I'm thinking about. But also in addition, what I also heard is that the residents are responsible to find these contractors and deal with the contractors. And I'm assuming, and no disrespect to any of our residents, because I heard some of them saying, I don't know what's needed, what the specs are. And we do have that expertise in the village. So maybe while we do the repair, we can talk to the contractors in the appropriate lingo, and then maybe even negotiate a better price than what the residents are getting. Because, I mean, I hate to say it, but contractors, if they know you don't know what you're talking about, they'll probably hike up the price a little bit. I hate to say it that way. But, you know, wherever is you guys in the village will be able to talk about it.
So how many houses are we talking about? Are we talking about two houses or 40 houses?
Two.
It's one area that serves two homes.
May I speak up?
Right.
There we go.
Okay. What's your, yes. If you promise you'd just be a couple minutes.
I'll be very short.
All right, thank you.
Mary Ellen Monahan. I live at 1440 next door to Sheila. I'm barely one of those seniors you're talking about. But, and I'm a widow.
Not a
I'm
day over 39, right?
Right. I'm a widow in the house. And I have been getting sewer water for the first time in 20 years, all right? Mm. I am very concerned about it. I know we're all concerned about the financial aspect of it. What about the health issue? We have two sewers containing fecal matter that are going into the street. What about our health issues? Is there any concern there? Should we be concerned? And number two, another question is, when they check the sewers, are they going to check my line to the city? How do I know that I'm okay? I mean, I haven't had a sinkhole or anything in the street. Mm-hmm. And I did have my sewers rotted recently all the way out to the street. So, but am I going to have a problem when all of this is being repaired? So that's a concern. Thank you. That's a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jeff, as you tell it in public works, just in general, as we televise the sewer lines, are we checking the connections along the way?
Yeah. This will answer hopefully your question.
So we can see a small, very small portion because our camera just runs down the main, obviously. Mm-hmm. So as we run down the main, we can kind of glance off to the side with the camera and see where that connection comes in. As John pointed out, in this particular case, it wasn't a complete separation at the main. It was back a little bit. So some of those things get a little harder to see. In some cases, you get some tree roots in there and things like that too. So there are different types of obstructions, different types of failures. And we have very limited view from the sewer main that we're inspecting at the time. Mm-hmm. So yes, sometimes, and sometimes no. I mean, it really is tricky.
Right. Okay. So you're saying we might be able to see her line, but if we don't and there's an issue,
a plumber can come out and televise the line. Certain. Any resident at any time can come out and have their line televised.
The other thing I just want to throw out there is that we are currently on, I think, every 4 years or 5 years.
It's five.
Based on how much our operations crews can clean and televise in a given year, we're only able to get back to a particular location every 5 years. So that seems to keep things clean for the most part, and we're not having too many obstructions in the main that reduce flow and create problems. So the schedule seems to work on that end, but a collapse, if it's, you know, just starting when we go through 1 year, over the course of 5 years, you can imagine how much that can deteriorate a pipe and it can get a lot worse in that time before we can even get back there too. So it's not like we're also able to look at these on an annual basis either.
Right. But it doesn't sound like that is, you know, a need either. It's the need is to do it on a fairly, you know, 5-6 year basis.
To make sure our mains
are
functioning.
So the whole maintenance thing, yeah, is one thing which is important to know. Meanwhile, we got to fix this problem.
Right.
And so, Kathy, could you just allow while
he's going to
stand
for a while?
Oh, yes, Jeff, of course.
60 seconds.
All right. Thank you. So maybe. Wallace Harris, 1438 Monroe. So I'm one of the families that has to deal with this. And I, having listened to this, I'm going to just make a real plea to the trustees to consider solving this issue pretty fast. One of the contractors that submitted the most detailed report, I appreciate it's our property, the line, but that's not the only thing that has to be repaired at this point. You are rebuilding all of the sandy ground that's beneath it. That's well beyond our property. That's village. That's the village's responsibility to rebuild the ground that's underneath it. And we, no one, not even Public Works, has seen the full extent of the damage until that street is over. And if somebody tells you they have, they're not telling you the truth. You have to expose the entire ground now to open it, to do all the backfill of the aggregation that Mr. Tomasini talked about. This can be a tremendously expensive project. So the piping is one thing, but you are rebuilding 1400 block, and 1500 block is sandy soil. We don't know how much damage has already been done. We're talking about repairing and filling gigantic holes. Imagine Public Works knocking on your door tomorrow morning and saying, you've got a sinkhole, your sewer's disconnected, you got 72 hours or whatever you come up with, 2 weeks to spend $50,000, $100,000. We don't know the extent of the damage. Right. And I will tell you, we cannot fix that until we fully understand our liability, because our contractor clearly notes if they cut public lines, we're responsible for repairing. As they do certain gravel refills, we're responsible for paying that. That's actually not in the current contract. That $20,000 estimate, which is the most complete estimate we've got so far, has a whole host of things that still have open costs. So this isn't a $20,000 expense. It's certainly not $10,000 that your Public Works folks told you about. That's not the case. This is a very expensive issue on a street that we know has been flooding for a long time. And if my memory serves me right, 2011, we had tremendous rains in 2011, which doesn't surprise me that the ordinance changed. So there's a lot of liability in question. We will answer the question, what caused this, before we fix it. There's no question about it. We will not take action until we solve that question, because we can't afford to take on that liability. So I ask this board to strongly consider the repairs. And Kathy, I appreciate you putting that forth. And I know there's some momentum and support here, and I appreciate what you all are doing. So I'm making a strong plea that let's fix this problem. I know maybe it's two residents that get lucky and you fix it for us. And I'm sorry that happens, but happy it happens. But I also think it's a bigger issue in the community if this continues to happen. And you have two blocks, 1400 and 1500 block of Monroe, that has not undergone any kind of sewage repair. To take a good look at that picture.
Yeah.
That's a real flood on that picture. There's been nothing to mitigate that. And I don't care what you say about the phase one and phase two. What I know is that when it rains heavy, we flood.
Yeah.
And that feels like a village responsibility. So thank you all for listening. I appreciate it. Yeah.
So that goes back to my question. We're not talking about two houses. We're now talking about two blocks. So we've got to understand this. I mean, we're not going to be able to, I mean, you know, I'd love to be able to say we're going to go out and fix it tomorrow, but we can't. I mean, logically, it doesn't make any sense.
I think we have a sinkhole and a disconnection of two houses. That's what we have. I think what Wendell is just saying is that we have it could be a bigger problem, and it could affect.
Well, I tend, and this is no disrespect to anybody, I tend to agree with him, because we all know how it happens around here. It's, you know, we live in a 100-year-old community, and, you know, you open a can of worms and, you know, all the worms come running out. So the question is, how do we get, do we have to get Burke in here to go through and analyze what's going on here? This is not a simple fix. So, you know, I want to help the residents as much as anybody else, but we got to figure out how we're going to approach this.
No, I agree with you, Bob. I'm not suggesting that we just fix it and walk away. I'm suggesting that we fix it and then try to ensure that we mitigate or understand what caused the problem, you know, and mitigate it in the future and ensure that we have continuous maintenance and
find money for it.
Right.
From FEMA or somewhere, you know, from a capital budget in Springfield. I'd like to do, they've got money. Yeah. So.
And I was just saying that I am suggesting that we fix these two now.
Yeah,
because
that's all I'm suggesting.
They're broken. And while we open up the street, which it sounds like we would be, or well, not us personally, but we would then be identifying not only what the connection problems are or whether there's all these other issues regarding the soil, gravel, et cetera, at least our engineer will be able to look at that and tell us how bad the situation is.
How about if we agree to do this? You know, take what we just said and asked Lisa and the Public Works to provide a proposal back to the village no later than tomorrow so we can understand the trustees. I mean, we could do this, I think, through consensus.
Well, so
how do I do this?
The board can only take final action if an item is on the agenda and it's properly approved by the board. The board could give consensus to staff on how to proceed and then ratify that later through adoption of an ordinance that amends the village code and then blesses what staff has done
or
in the meantime.
The expense of what we did.
So I guess, right, there's two issues. There's the near-term issue, which is what we have in front of these residents' homes. And I think what I'm hearing from the board is consensus that you would like the village to essentially waive the requirement that's in the code and assist them in making the repair. Right. And I think there is some good conversation to have about, and I understand what the residents are saying, the difference between the pipe, the street, and the aggregate underneath.
Right.
And so I understand that. So if the direction is... The village is responsible, but I think we want to get clear. The village is responsible for the street and the materials surrounding the pipe or including the pipe. We have no idea how far back the breakage goes. I don't know. I think you may have televised the line, but I'm not. Do we know how long the break is?
No. I don't believe we didn't. We were just televising from the main. We could see the missing sections
of
pipe.
And I guess
I mean
from the residents. Do we know how big the break is?
And that's our concern, because once we open the street, we really don't know. Right. And then we know there's 18 feet between the main and the curb. So if there's any breakage between there, we don't want a patchwork fix, just to fix at the T. It obviously, if the street is open, it needs to be repaired. If the repairs are needed, we want to take care of it all at the same time.
So sure, I completely understand.
Running from your house to the street?
That was what was kind of walked out by one of the public works officials, because I asked, what's the distance between the curb and the main line? And that was what he kind of walked down and estimated. About 18 feet from my side, 18 feet from her side, to the main line.
That's
what I think we're talking about.
That seems a lot, though.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like 3 foot sections of clay tile pipe that go up to the curb.
18 feet?
It might have been an estimate. Yeah.
Right, okay. I was going to say 18 feet on both sides seems too big.
So we have to decide what we're agreeing to fix. Are we agreeing to fix the stuff that's in the street, or are we agreeing to go up to the resident's house?
Yeah,
I
think it's to the curb, right?
Well,
What I heard
was the residents were comfortable. I wouldn't say comfortable. Were willing to pay up to the curb, and they were expecting the village to pay from the curb to the street.
Yeah.
I think I heard something different.
Okay. Well.
Okay, but I think that's what we should do, right? Because the curb beyond is our response. Yes.
Right.
Well,
that's the allegation.
But for now it is.
Right.
If there's something under my driveway, I don't expect the village to cover that.
Right.
But at the curb and to the asphalt, to me, that's that's all street.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all village.
But the longer we have the problem, the higher the probability the soil can start eroding.
We understand that. And that's, we'll continue. We need to look at it long term.
Right.
No doubt about it. We're just trying to figure out how to fix the issue now. And
so what we would need is consensus of the board to authorize staff to make the repair from the curb to the main, all portions of the repair.
For those sinkholes, for the two.
For these two properties. And then we can come back on August 9th, which is your next board meeting, and ratify that.
Right.
In the meantime, we can begin researching the questions that have been asked. I don't know that we will have a complete solution by August 9th, but we can certainly report back to the village board in that time. Unless the solution is, regardless of the data wherever we are at that point in evaluating this issue, repeal the ordinance. So I guess I'm looking for direction too on what we're going to come back with on August 9th or later.
I want to make sure too that these people have come to our meeting. We've had a discussion, a robust discussion around this. But as we are researching this and trying to come up with solutions, there may be other households that are in the same predicament. You know, John, you mentioned this happens a few times a year. I would want to know about anybody else.
Well, I think that's what Bob said. What's the liability?
And I mean, well, I mean, if it comes up that we are understanding that, you know, that we're not just taking care of this group of people because they came here tonight. There may be people who don't even know to come to a meeting, and so they may be chilling
out. Right. Well, that's what we're talking about, ratifying the ordinance. Erica. Right. So it would take care of anybody that would come before us.
Amending the ordinance,
because you're right. I mean, you know, we need to get some, you know, database. But I don't want, I agree. So that's why we would look at the ordinance, but more importantly, do the research. But I'm really interested in knowing about FEMA. Todd's got me on this now. You know, about the money. Because if we could find some money to cover some of this, it would go a long way.
Right.
I have one question, though. I really think that, and I think others might have been saying this, but just to be clear, is to your point, and I think this is what you guys are also saying, is, look, we have to fix the problem, but you're going to probably have to cast a wider net and explore further if there's any issues, for example, with the sewer basin that was sinking and this issue. So I don't want to be that myopic that we're just fixing this problem without truly understanding cause and effect.
I think that's why we want to take some time to do research on what I would consider, right? We have the near-term issue and the longer-term policy question that the ordinance addresses. And I completely appreciate where you're coming from and the underlying conditions either in the roadway that are contributing to it. So, I hear your concern completely.
Well, as part of the Stormwater Master Plan, Christopher Burke Engineering is going to look into this all throughout the village. So, I mean, these are also storm sewer pipes in addition to sanitary. They're combined sewer pipes. Right. So they're going to be looking at this on this block and throughout the village. So
Just so everyone knows, for the residents' point of view, we approved doing a long-term sewer management project so we could look at all the village and make sure that we prioritize, you know, as best we can, you know, all of our sewers. So, John, you were going to say something.
Well, I have some concerns about tabling this until August 9th.
No, we're not tabling it.
No, not tabling it.
But we're talking about putting together something now, and then it would be ratified August 9th. Does that mean we're waiting until August
9th? No, we take action now, and we just approve it.
All right.
To be clear,
so
the board
we're giving consensus to...
Okay. The board cannot take action because there's no agenda item.
We're giving
and that's
direction.
An Open Meetings Act legal requirement. So instead, you're giving staff consensus. Similar to when there's a parking problem before you've amended the ordinance, you tell staff, please don't enforce that parking zone until we can adopt the legislation to make it effective.
Gotcha.
All you're doing is giving staff consensus. You're not taking action.
Gotcha. No action. Consensus. Mark.
One thing to add to the pot that should be studied.
Yeah, you got to come
up,
Mark.
Stand up and
otherwise, we get in trouble.
My mistake. I apologize. I think one of the things that would really help here, I'm not an attorney, but I did read the ordinance several times, and it appeared to me, I was scratching my head, it was quite nebulous. There was an ambiguous. I have no idea of defining where that line of demarcation is. My way of thinking is that if the T is where the problem is. The T is part of the main, not the lateral. But we need to define that going forward. So I'll throw that into the mix.
That's probably a good point, just to be more clear in the ordinance. Okay, so just so we understand, what we're doing is giving you, consensus direction, to go ahead and work with the residents to get this fixed, and then back and come on August 9th, we'll ratify or update or do what we need to do to ensure that our code reflects what we might want to do.
So,
go ahead.
So the ordinance on August 9th will ratify or approve those expenditures, and then the code will be amended after you have a further policy discussion in light of the research.
Right,
so on the 9th, the code won't be amended, but you will have blessed what staff did in the meantime.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that.
You're welcome.
in between now and doing the research, if anything else comes up with residents having the same issue, I think we should would know. Be good right. for us to know.
Right. There are no other pending issues like this that I'm aware of. So.
Okay. Right. But yeah, if we're not aware we'll of any.
Certainly
of
let them know.
Right.
We'll do our female research, state research. All right, very good. Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Okay, Jan, you're up. No? But you've got a different issue. Well, their issue's done. You got a different issue.
Jan Sager, 435 William. The issue is, I put down traffic hazard, but it's really pedestrian safety. The intersection at William and Lake is becoming more dangerous for pedestrians. And our condo board, through a roundabout way, contacted President Adusi. And I thank you, Kathy, for then forwarding the story. About it was a couple in our building who were trying to cross and the bus had stopped and let them start to cross, and here comes some driver speeding through the middle of the street, middle of Lake Street, and almost hit this couple. So the condo board then wrote to Kathy, and Kathy forwarded thank you for that to Traffic and Safety. So to
Jeff.
And to one of the commissioners or two of the commissioners on traffic and safety.
Oh, Doug Reese
and Rick Gillis,
and Rick.
I think.
Right.
Okay. So that was all. I just wanted to thank you.
I appreciate that, Jan. And I know that Jeff is following up. I mean, you know, our issue is that it's a state street and, you know, we fight with IDOT constantly. But because even down by Keystone. You know, we wanted to put up a light because of the kids, and you know, of course, we said no because there's one right there on Thatcher and Lake.
Yeah,
so
we did
put flashers, which mm-hmm. I like, Jeff. I mean, if we could get a flasher, like you know, button.
Okay, thanks.
And really, they work. All right, Jan, thank you, and yeah, I mean, we're not gonna let it go. We're gonna keep researching it. Okay. All right, so Mindy said she can't. Come down. She's in her meeting. So we'll just now go on to our next elected official.
Phyllis Rubin.
I'm sorry, Phyllis. Are you there?
Gosh.
Hi, Phyllis.
Phyllis did email me after she signed up for public comment. There she is. Okay, good. I wanted to.
Sorry, Phyllis.
Something
oh, boy.
Okay. Wait a minute. Let me turn this one off. I'm at two different meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening to all that. I want to say, you know, I'm Phyllis Rubin. I'm at 411 Ashland Avenue, just south of the Lake and Laker building, which is what I will talk about. But listening to what's going on Monroe with a sinkhole and the sewer and flooding, you know, given that this condo, I know there is not a multi-story condo over these sinkholes, but from what happened in Florida, if we don't look at our infrastructure here and take care of things that are sinking and floods that are happening in people's homes, that's really a big worry. So I know you had a whole big discussion about that. I couldn't hear everything, but I trust that the village will take care of the problem. Okay. So I want to ask my questions and comments about Lake and Lathrop.
Read your note. So, I mean, we can probably address
good.
Some of those to save some time.
Sure.
Okay.
Fine.
Is that better?
You know, what's going on? Why didn't they start in June as they said they would? If it's because, you know, I think about why it might be. And if it's because they haven't sold the requisite number of units, I don't think they said that in May when they came to present. I think they said, we're going to start below ground work in June. It's now the middle of July. Nothing's happening. So I think we all want answers.
Yeah.
Have the permits been obtained? Have they answered the questions they need to answer for the village? Also, I asked this last time, but they weren't here to answer the questions about radon. Well, no, the time before I asked it, and they didn't answer the question about radon. So people in my building are concerned about that. And now there is I'd like them to answer questions about the toxicity of this barrier, or any danger, any environmental danger about the barrier. And then I did not put this in my letter to the board, but there are also people in the building are concerned about the fact that the site is an eyesore. The fencing stuff is coming down from it. The fencing is not attractive anyway. There's weeds growing in the land. One of the residents said it's taller than the fence. I don't think it's taller than the fence, but it's getting there. And, you know, this is just a really sad corner of our village that's very visible. I guess anybody driving by every day would say, what's going on there? So it'd be nice to get some answers.
Yep.
And it would be nice to get it done.
Yep.
Thank you.
I agree. So, I mean, I'll just ask Lisa to address some of them, and then Lake and Lathrop, the folks from Lake and Lathrop are here today, so they'll address some. Is that fair?
Yeah, I can just real quickly touch on the status of the building permit. The remaining issue that was to be resolved had to do with dryer vents and how they run. I think, Mark, you can clarify if I'm wrong here, how they run vertically through the building. So the comment has been addressed. The drawings are being updated to reflect the correction, and then all remaining issues for the village's building permit have been resolved.
Okay. So, Mark, I'm going to ask you to hold on to your comments when we get to your point, if you don't mind. And then I think we'll address Phyllis's questions about the EPA and a lot of things that she we will address some of your questions. I don't know if I can get them all, but we will address what we can, Phyllis, I promise you. So.
Yep.
So we just have a little bit before Lake and Lathrop, but I think I prefer to have Mark talk during his moment in time. So if that's okay. So with that, I'm going to move to elected official comments and announcements, and I'll ask Trustee Bochner to start, please.
Thanks. I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on lands that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, the Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. Don't have much to report for this meeting. Just hope that everybody had a safe 4th of July. And that's it for me today.
Thank you. Trustee Gillis?
I have nothing to report. Thanks.
Okay. But thank you for that letter to the resident about extravaganza.
I guess I can tell. Yes. We had a letter. We stopped doing the recycling extravaganza. Initially due to COVID, and also because of the sheer amount of work it takes to get that off the ground. Julie Moeller did it as a labor of love after the last recycling extravaganza, where we had people come from all over to drop off their electronics because we got it paid for, which was good, but one of the requests of having it paid for was that it was open to everybody. The Sustainability Commission decided that they wanted to think about it differently. We went into COVID, we wouldn't have it, and now we really, if we do want to bring it back, it would have to be with some resident volunteers. Mm-hmm. All that was more eloquently put into an email to a resident.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There are other extravaganzas, right, that West Central does, Lisa?
I'd have to go back and look at that.
Yeah, I think so.
We can look it up, and if there's other recycling events, we can use our communication tools to broadcast it.
One in Burr Ridge, I think, was closed down for a while because of COVID.
Yeah, that's at their public works facility. I'll look it up real quick.
There's a couple of them around. I know there's one up in Elk Grove Village that takes a lot of stuff. They charge $20 for a TV, but there's a couple around. But I think unless they opened up again, the one in Burridge was closed for a long time.
Well, the Burridge one is actually run by eWorks, which is the place in Elk Grove Village. And eWorks, it's the same group, and eWorks is a great organization. They employ the disabled, and any information, you know, any money that they do collect obviously goes to, you know, kind of continue their good works. They are actually in Illinois, they're in New York, so they are a national organization, and that does cover electronic recycling. We also had a bike exchange this year. A resident saw the opportunity and did it on their own. I think it's important that maybe we have more residents that do smaller events, which are not as tough to do. And again, keep in mind that a lot of the stuff that was collected at the recycling extravaganza, there are all those places still exist. Animal Care League for all of your, you know, kind of pet stuff, etc.
So maybe we put something on the website just to kind of
Residents. There's a household hazardous waste facility in Naperville that remains open, and I'm on Burridge's website. We'll find out, and we can certainly help spread the message.
Okay, great. Thank you. Trustee Vasquez?
No comments. Thank you.
Okay, very good. John? Clerk?
I'm good. Thanks.
Good. Okay. Katie?
Thanks. I just wanted to follow up on our discussion from last week about asking the EDC to look into and assess the Dominican, potential sale on behalf of the village and come to the village board with their research and their recommendation. And I think that's what we decided to do. It just wasn't clear to me from the notes or the minutes from last meeting. It was more clear to me from the audio than it was from the minutes. And then I didn't hear it discussed at the EDC meeting that happened in between today and our last village board meeting. So I wanted to just be sure that I did understand that correctly.
Well, we can ask them. I mean, but and they can weigh in. They should weigh in. But you got to remember, if there's any changes or discussion, we'll have to bring it back to the plan commission, because they actually do the comprehensive plan, which we spend a lot of time and energy on. I have no issues for the EDC, but it doesn't stop there for discussion, is what I'm trying to say. So sure. I mean, any comments on that? I mean, anybody have any issues?
I think it makes sense to do that for sure.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to have the EDC weigh in.
Yeah, I think if we're looking at this, it would make sense to start with a joint meeting of the Plan Commission and the other bodies that may have an opinion on this before the Plan Commission takes up what would essentially be an amendment to your comprehensive plan, which is no small undertaking.
No small. Like I said, I think we follow our comprehensive plan. I think the community wants green space, but if the board wants us to let the EDC and Plan Commission take up something different, it's up to you guys. Hearing no objection, we'll go ahead and bring them together.
Okay, thank you. That's all I had.
I just want to say I hope the residents are enjoying the summer so far, but to also be aware that as we enter this major month of summer, and the block parties open up and the pools open up and we are decreasing our social distancing, to please be aware of the variants that are slowly rising in the background. And you know, I would just encourage our residents to practice some of the protocols that got us out of the pandemic so far as they proceed through the summer to the best of their ability.
Thanks.
I have two things. One, I think I can do, but could I talk about something that's on the consent agenda without addressing the consent agenda?
Or pull it from the consent agenda when we get
just
there.
Just pull it? And talk about it then? Okay.
What do you?
I was just going to acknowledge something, but I'll hold
off. Oh, okay. Just pull it.
Okay. And then just, I wanted to give everyone a heads up because we received a two-day U.S. Postal Service very official envelope with a check for $4,900 made out to us, and was asked to go to a Walmart and cash it in for a couple of certified checks. And so that scam is going around. So I spent a few minutes with Chief O'Shea and Officer Ransom the other day and put it in their capable hands. But I just want people to know that, you know, there's all sorts of things that are out there. especially when, you know, we talk about our elderly and citizens, you know, making sure that they know to be very careful on things that they're opening up in the mail and especially on their email these days. So, and then I'll hold my other item till later.
Okay.
Thanks.
And Kathy, maybe Bob's warning on that scam. Can we put out some alert to our residents? Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I have nothing, but you did spur thing in my head about, you know, an incident that happened on July 4th with a young teenager on Washington and Gale, and it's an unfortunate situation and just sad. I did talk to the parents, and they were very grateful to our River Forest Police Department and all the work, Jim, that your organization did on their behalf. They were very, very grateful. So thank you. But that just, you know, tells you, you know, it's hard, and we need to continue to be vigilant wherever we are at. So thank you, Jim. I don't have any further stuff to talk about, so we'll go ahead to the consent agenda. What do you want to pull?
I'd like to pull item, where'd it go? G, please.
Okay, G.
Can we pull D and E also?
Sure, yeah, because that's, we're going to have a presentation on that anyway, so that's good. Okay, so then if I can get a consent agenda from to A to C, F, H, I, and J.
I move we approve the consent agenda items A through C, F, and H through J.
Second.
Okay. So let's take yours first, Bob, and then we're going to ask Heidi and her colleagues to come on up and talk, give us a little presentation.
Wait, we had a vote on the stuff. Oh, with, that's
I
on,
know, oh. But I'm just give me your. Oh, vote on what we got. Yep. Sorry.
Right.
Oh, boy. Sorry.
Right.
Any questions on what we moved on? Yowzer. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Yes. Right. I've kind of lost my way.
Okay. Consent agendas, A, Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes, June 28, 2021. B, Executive Session meeting minutes, June 28, 2021. C, Right-of-Way Encroachment Waiver and Agreement for an Irrigation System located at 825 Bonnie Bray. F, Award of Bid and Contract to A Lamp Concrete Contractors, Inc. for 2021 Green Alley Improvement Project in the amount of $797,190.60. H, monthly department reports, accounts payable June 2021, $1,419,779.53. And J, village administrator's report. Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Okay, very good. If I can get a motion and a second on consent agenda G for now.
Make a motion to approve agenda items G, consent agenda item G.
Second.
Okay. All right,
Bob. I just wanted to take a second to publicly thank for those who don't have an agenda, it's receive and file the resignation letter of EDC Chairperson Lee Newbecker. Just wanted to take a second, publicly recognize Lee for his work. You know, if you've dealt with Lee, he has an unabounding passion and energy and enthusiasm for our community. And it'll be a loss that he and his family will be moving on. But really appreciate it and all the work that he did, and hopefully that spirit will carry on past his term. So, but I just wanted to publicly thank him for that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Lee's done a great job in the spirit of our conversation with boards and commissions. As I mentioned, I said as soon as I get him, I will post him and let you know. So this is a so something that I will be appointing both a chair and a replacement for his membership. So yeah, Lee's been great. His family's great, but so grateful that he spent as much time giving of his time. So any other comments or questions? Hearing none, let's go ahead and take the vote, please, John.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Okay, so
Trustee,
Gillis.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
I'm going fast here. Okay, if I can get a motion and a second to move both D and E, since they're together. Then we can have Heidi come up.
I move we approve consent agenda items D and E.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay. Well, very good, and thank you for pulling it, because if you didn't, I was going to, just to make sure we had some discussion, of course, with this. So I'm going to ask Heidi to come up. She's one of the founders, I guess, of GovHR.
I am. Okay. Here, I have a folder for each of you.
Thank you.
It just has a little more information about our firm.
Thank you.
Not at all, of course.
All good, no worries.
It just gives you a copy of our presentation tonight, as well as...
Here, we can give one down to the clerk.
And also
thank you.
A client
here,
list.
Here. They don't need it. Yeah. And let me just give you a little preview. So thank you for coming to our board meeting. I had asked Heidi. We had lots of conversations around her process. We used Heidi and her firm, GovHR, to hire Eric. And, of course, we were very pleased with the hire. You are the recruiting firm out there in government recruiting, at least to my research. I wholeheartedly support our efforts. I think you bring a lot of professionalism and process to the table, and that's what we need. So with that, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. And as President Ducey said, my name's Heidi Voorhees. I'm the president and co-founder of GovHR USA. And I'm joined here tonight by Lee Zimborski, who's one of our senior vice presidents, a full-time recruiter with our firm as well. As the village president said, I did work on the recruitment back in 2010 when Eric Palm was hired. So I'm, very familiar with River Forest. Just by way of background, I've also been a village manager in Wilmette, Illinois, where we have combined sewers. So tonight's conversation was very familiar to me. But I've spent the last 20 years in recruitment and selection, and in 2009 founded GovHR that I co-own with Joellen Cadamatori. And I just want to give you a little bit about our philosophy. Lee's going to talk about our process. And you have before you, I think, two proposals, one for village administrator and one for fire chief. So we're happy to answer questions. In the folders I gave you, you have the biographies for Lee Zimborski, who will be spearheading the village administrator recruitment, and Tim Sashko, who will spearhead the fire chief recruitment if we're approved to do that. But because I'm very familiar with River Forest, I'll never be too far from either one of those and available to help and plan to assist in the process. So you also have a copy of our presentation, as well as a very partial client list that kind of hits the highlights of the recruitment and selection processes we've done in Illinois and Wisconsin, just to give you a little idea. So just very quickly, we really do believe in a partnership with our clients, and in working with you and being very transparent about our process, about the candidates that we find. If you want to see all of the resumes, you are welcome to see them. We'll give you a log. We'll give you our impressions. Lee will talk a little bit about our process, but we just want to say up front that that's very important to us, and that's a premise upon which our firm was founded. We have consultants located across the country. As you can see, since our founding in 2009, we've conducted approximately 900 recruitments in 41 states. So we've worked and we are working all over. Lee is based in Wisconsin, but he has a significant background in Illinois as well. And Illinois is our headquarters and certainly our home base. But the benefit of the people that we have across the country is we get information about potential candidates. And the reason why that's important is you never know in doing these recruitments who might want to come home. So sometimes people leave a state, and then, and especially now, we are seeing so much movement, so many people making decisions following the pandemic. They're relocating to be closer to family, they're changing jobs, they're moving. So we are definitely seeing that happen. So that's why, you know, we will suggest advertising on websites that have a national reach, because we've seen that happen over and over again, and definitely more recently. This just gives you a little background of our client base. We've had a lot of repeat clients. They come back to us over and over again because they've been satisfied with the services that we bring. And it's important, I think, that you know that our consultants all have local government leadership experience, stay connected to their disciplines. And Lee will tell you a little bit about himself, but Tim Sashko, for example, is a former fire chief in Mundelein. He's currently the chair of the Lake County Board of Public Health, so he's active in the region, very well known in the fire profession, particularly in Illinois. Just wanted to give you a little flavor of some of the more recent village manager and administrator recruitment and selection processes that we've been involved in. Some of these Lee's done, some of these I've done, some other people in our firm have done, but we have been very, very busy even during the pandemic, which was somewhat surprising, but we did stay very busy and had started using Zoom before the pandemic, so we were ready for that part of it. But we've seen a lot of movement in senior positions in local government. And this also just gives you an idea of some of the fire chief recruitment and selection processes. And almost every one of these was done by Tim Sashko. So he is very well known and very active in the recruitment and selection space. And I think if selected, you'll enjoy working with him. Before I turn it over to Lee to talk about our process, the mayor has caught me up on where you all are. I know there's been some advertising with the West Central Municipal Conference on the administrator position, and we are ready to pick that up and carry forward any candidates that applied through that. And we'll do some additional, maybe shorter term advertising and outreach through our social media and those things, but I think that you'll see that is very seamless. So we have no problem picking up that process and carrying it forward. So I'll let Lee. All
right. Thanks, Heidi. I'm glad to be here tonight. I'm Lee Szymborski, and things are approved tonight, but I would be the main consultant assigned to the village administrator recruitment. Like Heidi said, I come to the firm having had a background in local government management, but I have been with GovHR for 7 years now, doing recruitments and management consulting full-time for the firm. But prior to that, I was a city administrator myself in Wisconsin, as well as an assistant village manager here in the greater Chicago area. So what I want to talk with you about is just give you a real brief overview of what you can expect the process to include, which is for beginning, I would do an outreach to all of you, the board, as well as talk to your department heads to develop a profile for what are you looking for, what's going to be a good fit here in River Forest for your next village administrator. And we'll have that conversation all with an eye toward developing the profile, which serves not only as a marketing piece for us to get the word out, but it's also that measure by which you will discern whether or not the candidates are what you're looking for, what you said in the beginning, what you were looking for. We'll have that conversation, develop that profile, bearing in mind too that our clients, and we're sure that River Forest will be the same, place an emphasis on their desire to have a diverse candidate pool, and so that we will make sure that our efforts, GovHR's work, will seek to meet those goals to provide you as diverse of a pool of candidates based on the established relationships that we have had and we've made over the years with a number of organizations to assure that we fan out to bring you as diverse of a candidate pool, and we'll work toward that end very, very diligently.
One thing I just realized, we put a bunch of acronyms up there that may not mean anything, but NFBPA is the National Forum for Black Public Administrators, and their consulting arm is called I4X, and we have a formal relationship with them. So we co-propose on projects, we work with them on candidate selection and that sort of thing. ELGL is Emerging Local Government Leaders, and then LGHN is the Local Government Hispanic Network. LWG is the League of Women in Government. So those are the organizations that we support both financially and with our time, and that we interact with regularly in the recruitment, selection, and management consulting space. So I'm sorry, I realized that I didn't spell those out, so I wanted you to know.
Thanks, Heidi. So our process after meeting with all of you to develop that profile, then gets to, maybe I could go to the next one, the outreach process. And I want to say from the time in which we would kick off throughout the point in which I would bring a portfolio of candidates to you takes about 9 to 10 weeks or so. But during this period, during the outreach period, that's really combines a contemporary outreach methods, through a whole host of ways in which, we go about our business, both by doing outreach through social media and a number of different platforms. We also maintain our own database of candidates that we would reach out to. But it's using, I should say, it's combining those modern techniques of recruiting along with just those that direct outreach to candidates, to folks that, I will get on the phone and or I will tap on their shoulder and say, there's an opportunity in River Forest that I want you to take a look at. And, I could tell you any number of examples in which, we have been able to get the attention of a candidate who is not even looking for a job or not looking to move, but because of our outreach and our effort to say, take a look at this opportunity, that person, has done that. And I think we've been very successful in that regard. The outreach period usually takes about 5 weeks or so, at which point then we'll have a pool of candidates in which, I'll take a look at everyone that submits an expression of interest or so. We don't use a key word search in taking a look at those resumes, because we want to make sure that we, I spend the time, make the effort to know those candidates. And part of that then leads us to the next part, in which I'll make, after discerning out of, say, a pool of maybe 40 or 45 candidates or so, that based on, again, that recruitment profile that we worked with you to develop, then I'll look to narrow that pool down and say that might be about 18, in which then, I will have a Zoom meeting, depending on the location, perhaps even a cup of coffee with a candidate, to talk with each person individually for about an hour or so, to really make to have a close understanding of what somebody says on paper, they can back up with examples. So, we'll look to see what are some of the real life specifics that they can provide that gives us a closer picture of what that candidate is like. What's also going on is that we will be doing initial reference checks, but then we also do social media and a media search to understand what kind of media footprint is out on these candidates. And so that I will do the best to beat all of you to the punch that when you get your portfolio of candidates and you'll be looking on the internet for perhaps, you know, what that candidate has been doing over the years, I will know that and I'll be able to tell you. Sometimes we find that candidates carry baggage that can be a little bit too heavy and they won't even make your portfolio. But in some instances, there are stories behind the stories. And I'll look to understand that. And if I think that a candidate's story still makes that person worthy of a closer look, I'll present that person to you as well. So at the time in which I bring a portfolio of candidates, we'll have those conversations. It will be the board's decision on who out of that portfolio you would like to invite for an interview, and then we'll take the process from there. Provide you a suggested format for interviewing candidates, develop interview questions or so, and then as you begin to narrow that group down, say if you want to do a community outreach effort as part of making a selection, we'll also facilitate that as well. Our work includes working with the candidates in negotiating an employment agreement on your behalf. You'll give me parameters in which you would like me to work with the candidate all toward the end of putting together a final employment agreement, but what also we do then at the tail end is then a final background investigation to make sure that that your next village administrator, that we know that the education, the criminal, and the financial background all has been searched.
And I do want to mention that we are going, because as I mentioned earlier, you have started a little bit of the mining of potential candidates. We are going to be able to shave some time off of that schedule. So the schedule that Lee outlines is what we would do for fire chief, but because you've gotten a little head start, we're going to be able to shave some time off of that for the village administrator one. So we'll work with you. Lee will work with you on a final calendar, so you'll know on this date, you're going to get a report from us on this date. You're going to have a meeting on this date. You're going to be interviewing. So it's really important that we get that schedule nailed down because people's calendars are getting busy and people are able to go away on vacation. So we want to make sure we do that. But the fire chief one will be probably a more traditional one because we're just getting that started. As we said in the beginning, it's a partnership between our firm and you to make sure that you find the village administrator that you are satisfied with and excited about as far as the leadership into the next several years of your community. We believe we have an excellent reputation in this field. We have a strong commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's something we've been passionate about since the founding of our firm, and we've been involved with all of those organizations that I mentioned earlier since the founding of our firm. And then we've, as I said, solidified some of those relationships in the last year. Our guarantee is 1 year, so if no matter what happens for each recruitment, we will come back and do the recruitment for free. We don't anticipate anything happening, it's very, very rare, but the guarantee is there if you need it. And we're certainly local, so that's not a problem. We're accessible throughout the process. We will establish, who our regular liaison people are for reporting, how you want that to happen. We do recognize that we represent you out in the field, so we are responsive to candidates, and we make sure that they feel that they've been well-informed and cared for throughout the process as well. We do have a strong commitment to the profession of local government. We work regularly with people who are in transition We work with students who are coming out. We help with resume development, with interviewing skills. All of this is free of charge. We do this at state and national conferences. So we are, and we're very committed to promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion in the local government profession. The city management profession is not a diverse one. It's about 80% white male. It has been that way for decades, and we're all working very hard to improve the representation of underrepresented minorities at all levels in local government. So I think I've covered most of this. We hope that you will consider our firm, and if there's any questions that anyone has, Lee and I are happy to answer those.
Yeah, great, thank you. Like I said, we've in the past have dealt with GovHR. I find them extremely professional, and it's very enlightening of how you grew your firm even from 2010 until now. So congratulations. Yeah, I'm very much in favor of what your firm does. So I'll just open it up to the trustees.
I have a couple of questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
The first is that the timeline for the this is actually a question more for Chief Bowman than for you. The timeline for the search for the fire chief is like 13 to 14 weeks. Have you committed to stay with us through the end of the search?
I'm retiring on September 19th, so about 10 weeks.
We would have to examine a potential interim option, and I have some ideas. The chief and I have talked about them briefly, but we would work for that period of time between Kurt's retirement and hiring a new candidate, because we want to make sure we give ourselves enough time to find the right candidate, of potentially looking at an interim fire chief for a brief period of time.
And then thanks for the presentation. You're clearly a very, you know, well experienced and have a good reputation. I just am wondering why what makes this decision to go with this firm a no bid? How do we decide not to look at other options? I have heard you say we've used them before in the past, actually, to hire Eric 10 years ago. And clearly, they've got a great reputation. But I would just like to know.
I think there are limited, recruiting firms out there. Number one, number two. My commitment has always been to wait till after the election to begin this process. So, and then we went through boards and commission changes, and I felt that we needed to do a lot of things before we got to this point. And I think it's important that we begin this process. And I think GovHR has proven in the industry that they're not only they're number one. I mean, you're a number one recruiting firm. So, I thought it was prudent to move ahead, because we've got Kurt moving and we got Lisa trying to keep the wheels on the car, and I just think we deserve to move ahead. So.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, the other thing I was going to add too is that because this firm is a good reputation, one of the things you're also paying for is the database access that this firm has. So there may be other firms, but they may not have as big of a database in terms of candidate pool. So it may be worth a little more to pay for the bigger candidate pool. So.
In addition to using GovHR to hire the village administrator in 2010, they were also used to hire the public works director 7 years ago and the finance director a few years ago. So they are a go-to municipal headhunter, essentially. I would agree with what Rez has said. Absolutely.
Thanks.
I have a question. So thank you for your presentation. And it does sound like you've made some efforts around diversity, equity, inclusion. And you said specifically in this year, this has been a reckoning for all of us in this nation. And I'd be interested in hearing what you've made in terms of changes at your company or in this process to make sure that you are inclusive.
Absolutely. Earlier this year, we did.
Oops. Uh-oh.
Sorry.
No, we've got somebody who's off mute.
Oh, maybe me. Huh?
There we go.
Sorry. How's that? Better? Okay. Our whole firm underwent implicit bias training earlier this year. We felt that that was something that was important to do. We also have a consultant that we've brought on board who does that training as well as other training, and I've known her since, you know, she and I've worked together for over 10 years, and she started her own company in Texas, and she has joined us and works with us on a variety of projects, you know, surrounding diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is a space that we have cared a lot about, and we continue to look for opportunities to train our staff. We have other staff members who have taken, gone through different programs and projects to educate themselves, because we are also doing a number of DEI officer recruitments. We just completed one in Fort Collins. We have one going on in Cedar Rapids. We had one in Oakland County, Michigan. So these are positions that are opening up that our firm is handling those recruitment and selection processes. So that's why we've undertaken some of the training so that we're prepared to do that. And then I think we just are, we've deepened our relationship with the National Forum for Black Public Administrators in working with their consulting arm. But the reason why we ended up working with them is, number one, we asked them to partner with us, but we've also supported them for the last 10 years. We've supported them financially, we've attended their events, we've interacted with their board, we speak at their conferences, and we've been doing that for the last 10 years. So it made perfect sense to them and to us to take that relationship further and co-propose on certain projects. So I would say those are probably the major areas. And I think if you look, and I can send this to you, we just did a synopsis of the recent appointments that have come through GovHR that our clients have made. And it's a very diverse set of candidates who have been appointed to leadership positions in local government. So we're not taking credit for that, because obviously it's the local government leaders that are making the appointments. But we are proud to be a part of those processes that have had those results.
Have you made any changes this year
in terms of
DEI?
In
the past year. Yeah.
Well, I think the training that we've undergone, the implicit bias training, the addition of several consultants to our firm. Adé Lewis is the woman that I'm referring to, who does that training. So we've undergone training, we've added training components, and we continue to seek that out.
Thank you.
Okay, sure.
Okay. Any further questions? John? You want to take the vote?
Yes.
Okay.
D, waiver formal bidding requirements and award of contract to GovHR for fire chief recruiting services in the amount of $22,500. E, waiver formal bidding requirements and the award of contract to GovHR for village administrator recruiting services in the amount of $20,000. Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Good, thank you. And thank you for the presentation, and we'll be talking.
Well, and thank you for the opportunity to work with you.
All right.
Thank you.
And Chief, are you sure about that?
Yeah, before.
All right, very good. Let's move on to, add six, consent items for separate consideration. If I can get a motion and a second, we'll hopefully move on to that.
Motion to approve payment for the general fund to McDonald's Caravitis for $63.
Second.
Okay. John, is there any questions regarding this?
I'd ask the clerk not to call my name on this particular item.
Thank you.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we'll go on to number eight, which is the update for Lake and Lathrop. And we'll ask the representative to take the podium, give us an update, and we'll be mindful of Phil's questions, too.
jump in?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Just on the note from Phyllis about weeds, we were out earlier this today looking at those.
Did you pull them?
We did not pull them. It was my actually intent to pull them until I saw that there was a few more than I had time for. So we'll coordinate getting somebody out there for that. So yes, we are on that and have committed to that. I think last time the subject was snow removal, but weeds is right there in the same category. We understand one of the other questions was about traffic. We did a whole traffic study back when the building was 30 residential units. And at that time, it required no changes to the vehicular systems around the traffic management around the property. And so since then, we have less units. We're down to 30 to 22. But in that change of units, we did not change the parking. So we have the same amount of parking, and that will help accommodate extra retail parking, et cetera, in the property. So I believe from a traffic.
Can you talk more into the mic? Do you mind?
So I don't hit it with my arm.
Yes. Okay, great. Thank you.
Try not to be too loud or create an echo. I can go back on that if need be.
No. Go ahead.
I think we've addressed the traffic issue in the past through the PD process. Yeah.
The environmental question, I think.
The environmental question, yeah. I was going to go in this order. I think we did speak to that in the last time we were here. We have confirmed since we've saw this question come up that that Pioneer, the engineer who's done the environmental work to date, has not done a radon check specifically or done any engineering related radon, but they said that the same vent system that we've talked about, the barrier and the venting, would be the same system used. So they're not aware of any radon concerns, and it would be the same system. Now, I believe it was referred to a barrier system earlier. Again, it's not just a barrier, but it's a barrier and a vent system, and this vent system has to go up 10 feet above any nearby windows and openings. So it's taking anything that could come out of the soil up and out the building through a managed and engineered system. Pioneer, a very much vetted engineer and a system that's very industry standard for these type of conditions. Right. I believe Lisa spoke to permit earlier. Last time we were here, we spoke of having 8 unit sales and a lot of progress with the retail. Fortunately, today we have 2 more residential sales that are in progress, so we're reaching 10. They usually take a few weeks to kind of get from initial interest to actually executed contracts. One's a little bit further than the other, but they're definitely moving forward. We're in what's called attorney review right now. So it's just a negotiating of terms that are in the agreement. So have had some very good positive progress on that. I believe just as a general reference on the retail, we have just under 14,000 square foot of retail. And of that, in context with that, we have 17,000 square foot of interest. Some of that is an LOI stage, some of it's being negotiated, some of it's us reaching out to people, but we have more interested retailers in the property than we have space, which is a good thing. And that just continued to grow and evolve since last time. I don't know that I can say we have that much more square footage under LOI, but just the dialogue continues and it continues. I'd categorize it as a restaurant and what they call these days is medical retail. Those are our 2 primary user types.
Can you just confirm, did you say not under letter of intent? LOI is letter of intent, not under letter of intent?
So letter of intent is just a process where they express their interest to us.
Uh-huh.
So one of those has been accepted. Others are in negotiation. So they're in various forms of stages of the LOI process. So we would go, the LOIs, what's important to the bank is getting those LOIs in place for the lender.
So you have a letter of intent from one?
From one,
commercial,
yes, for about 2,500.
Potential commercial
yes,
tenant.
Right.
And what's the square footage?
That one's around 2,500 square feet, but the others vary in different stages. And like I said, we've got 17,000 square foot of interest for just under 14,000 square foot of retail.
What type of business is that, the one that you for which you have
I think, what do we
intent?
Got on, the one that we have the LOI for? So in the medical retail realm.
Wow.
I know you talked about a pet place and a, maybe I got wrong, a vet? No?
Is vet in the mix? Kyle.
There's a veterinarian.
Yeah. A couple of restaurants.
Yeah.
So the interest has been very strong, which we've been happy with.
Anything else? Yeah. Go ahead, Katie.
Can you tell us why you weren't at our meeting last time? We were expecting you to be, to give us an update, and we've received questions from residents as to why you were not.
Well, we're hopefully answering those tonight. We just had a conflict and couldn't make it at that meeting. But.
Are you committed to continue to come at least once a month to update us?
Well, it depends on the meeting cycle, but yes, if we have updates, we're happy to come and give them. I think we're showing good progress this evening, and I probably wouldn't have had much to say 2 weeks ago because the residential sales, the two contracts that happened with the last 10 days. So it just ebbs and flows as to where we are in the process.
Yeah. I think part of it is that people want to just see that you're continuing to come and prioritizing the village and prioritizing the project.
Yes, there is no indication or no implication that we were not focused on the progress.
Okay,
sure.
And there's one piece that I haven't heard about, and that's the MWRD.
Oh, MWRD, that's more on the permit side. And I believe actually as late as 6:15 this evening, I was seeing some emails going back from our engineer in the village and sending off a letter to MWRD. I think it's the final item that they have to address, so they've made good progress on that. We've been kind of out of that. It's really just been between the engineer in the village and the MWRD to finalize one more detail. So I think we're very close on that. I thought the engineer said that if they got this letter out today, it could be finalized this week. Speaking of the subject of water management this evening.
So Phyllis keeps asking, why haven't you broken ground? You don't have a permit to break ground, but why haven't you broken ground?
Well, yeah, we don't have the building permit for the formal breaking ground, but there's a time frame in which you can approach a lender on a project like this. I think when we were last here at 8 Sales, that were getting us to the point where we could really start having meaningful conversations with the lender. We're currently out to 5 different lenders, but we're finding, which is changing our sort of path and mode each time, that there's a different landscape out there right now in the lending environment as it relates to post-COVID activity. We're seeing lenders, asking for more than traditional percentages of sales and requirements. So as those requirements, as we learn more about what that lending environment is, we're having to make decisions about what makes the most sense for starting and stopping, and trying to ideally, when we get started, it moves consistently and thoroughly through the process, and not start something and stop because we didn't foresee something. And again, we're eager to get started too. It's best for us for the sales and activity and the perception in the community and the buyer pool. But at the same time, we got to make the right decision for the holistic nature of the project. And again, we are a little surprised by the lending landscape has shifted a little bit. Fortunately, we've gotten some sales. I actually think we just put a banner on the sign today that said 40%. Now we can tear that down and say 45% if we get this next sale. So that's all good and positive things, but they're all important things that we need to fulfill the process.
Anything else from the trustees? All right, well, we'll see you next month, and we'll continue to work. I know Lisa continues in the village, Public Works continue to work with you.
All right, thank you, everyone.
We got to see some real progress. All right, for new business, I'd like to get a motion to approve.
I'd like to move to appoint or reappoint the following village officials. Number one, Gregory Smith of Klein, Thorpe, and Jenkins to serve as the village attorney and local prosecutor. And two, the law firm of Clark, Bard, and Smith to serve as the village labor and employment attorney, all having terms ending on May the 12th, 2025.
Second.
Okay, very good. And just so you know, I wholly support this. This is our appointment. And they go to the term of the village president, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Correct.
All right. So, any questions regarding Greg Smith and Clark Bard Smith?
If not, I'd like to.
Questions.
We got a lot of questions. We don't have time.
Not related to the appointment.
Right. I ask the clerk to go ahead and take the vote, please.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Okay, very good. So we'll go ahead and make a motion to go into executive session.
I move to enter into executive session to discuss the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the village, including whether a particular parcel should be acquired, and the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the village.
Second.
Okay.
Right. Well, so after the executive session, we'll end the Zoom when we go into executive session, and there will be no board action other than adjournment once we come out of executive session.
Right. I just left.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Move to go.
Yeah, we're going to go into executive session as soon as John takes the.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
President Ducey.
Yes. Okay.